for this morning is United States against Kokenis, which is number 11-14-26. So, Mr. Spivak.
The court, please. Counsel. Barry Spivak from Monaco and Spivak, and also Mr. Monaco here on behalf of Mr. Kokenis. Judge Shader insisted that a defendant may not present a good faith defense in a tax case unless and until he testifies. The judge acknowledged that ordinarily a defendant has no obligation to present evidence, but he believed there was what he called an obvious exception when good faith is at issue.
So my question for you, Mr. Spivak, is let's assume that Judge Shader was wrong about that and that, in fact, like most other states of mind, one can prove this by circumstantial evidence in ways that preserve the Fifth Amendment right. I don't understand why whatever error he may have committed isn't harmless, particularly in light of the evidence on the phony documentation of the deductions.
Your Honor, what the judge did is he really precluded the defendant from even arguing good faith. Certainly that was bad evidence against the defendant. But he precluded the defendant.
Terrible evidence against the defendant, because I thought his good faith arguments really went more to what should be counted as income, all this capital pooling stuff. And
I think it went more to that, Judge, but also, remember, as part of his defense, there was the question of whether, with respect to the conduct of the accountant who found it easier to go to the IRS, supposedly, and say something about what he felt was going on that was improper, and not to even go to Mr. Kokenis and say, why are we doing this? So I think, you know, when you start dealing with the good faith, you also have to think about the behavior of Mr. Mondero, the accountant, with respect to this case.
But the deductions alone, perhaps this is included in Judge Wood's question, those deductions alone would have been enough for that jury to find false filing.
Those deductions would have been enough, Your Honor.
And nothing about the good faith would have explained those.
Oh, I don't know, Your Honor. I don't necessarily agree with you, because I think that the good faith argument cut across all the items
Tell me how it gets to those deductions, paying personal expenses, construction, and all that.
Because you don't know who is responsible for that. If the jury believes, has an opportunity to believe, that Mr. Kokenis acted in good faith with respect to those larger items, then he's first able to argue that he was acting in good faith with respect to the personal items. He's able to bring up to the jury the fact that that Mr. Mondero was not a faithful employee, that Mr. Mondero found it easier to go to the IRS than to say to Mr. Kokenis, I don't think you can do these things. If you believe that,
I don't understand why anything is wrong with Mr. Mondero going to the IRS. Now, maybe he could have gone to Mr. Kokenis, but if he thinks that dishonesty is afoot and he goes to the IRS, then people are allowed to do that.
Oh, he's absolutely allowed to do it, Your Honor, but I think it says something about what Mr. With respect to his credibility. The fact that what you would normally expect, I would think, is that the person would go to say to the person who is asking him to reverse these sales, like, well, we can't reverse these sales, or why are we doing this? But instead, he paints a picture as though he would just dutifully do whatever Mr. Kokenis told him to do. I don't find that a natural way for someone to act. So I think that does go to his credibility. And the jury should have had an opportunity, or would have an opportunity, to judge his credibility.
But the jury knew about all of those things, didn't it? I mean, a lot of this is before the jury, if not with the label good faith belief on top of it. They learn about what Mr. Mondero does, for instance.
They did, but the defendant wasn't able to, you know, two things. One is, it was very unclear to me whether it appears that Judge Shader is basically saying you can't even argue good faith. You know, forget about whether I'm going to give a good faith instruction. You can't even argue it. It's not even an issue in this case. That just takes the breath out of the defendant's entire case. And
but didn't you argue lack of willfulness?
I'm not sure where lack of willfulness ends and good faith begins. I'm not sure where those two things match up, but obviously Judge Shader thought there was a difference because Judge Shader was not going to allow them to argue good faith. It's interesting, if you look at when Judge Shader made that ruling right in the jury instruction conference, he said something to the effect that with respect to willfulness, there could be circumstantial evidence with respect to willfulness, which I felt the judge was trying to cover that aspect of it. But the fact is, Judge Shader saw a difference, and it was a difference of what the defendant could argue. That the defendant, instead of saying, well, the government hasn't proved willfulness, the defendant would be able to argue, I have shown good faith. And he ought to be able to argue that. He's entitled to argue that. And what the judge did...
That's about arguing, but you also, in your brief, stress that there's evidence that you would have introduced that would have gone to this good faith issue. And the government responds pretty strongly that none of this evidence really would have done much. A, it was basically on the income side. And B, it doesn't tie it up, you know, like the tax expert, Mr. Tripp.
Tripp, Judge.
Yeah. So, it seems to me as soon as he finishes testifying what you were hoping he would say on cross-examination, somebody would say, well, does any of this apply to anything Mr. Kokenis did? And he'd say, I hadn't looked at that.
Well, and
it's ridiculous.
The judge should have let it play out that way, because also consider, Judge, when you look at the Seventh Circuit pattern instruction when it comes to income tax good faith,
mm-hmm.
It says that you may consider the reasonableness of the defendant's belief together with all the other evidence in determining whether the defendant had a belief in good faith. That means to me that the objective reasonableness of the defendant's belief...
The question of his belief has to be, as a matter of fact, before the jury.
Yeah, it does.
How could he have gotten to believe other than to testify that I believed?
Circumstantially, Judge. There's the evidence...
The circumstances,
all the evidence about the drilling fund or the pool of assets. He had evidence that Mr. Mondaro... And he did discuss tax issues.
Your argument was in part that if a reasonable person would have believed something, then perhaps Mr. Kokenis also believed it.
I'm sorry, Judge. I think that's what I was getting to with respect to the jury instruction. I think that does bear on reasonableness. If it is objectively reasonable, even though it's subjective reasonableness, if the matter is objectively reasonable, that's another reason a jury would have to believe that the defendant did not do something in bad faith. And I think the instruction allows for that. And a lot of the evidence that Mr. Kokenis wanted to get in did have to do with objective reasonableness.
But what did this pool of capital doctrine have to do with anything? I mean, I didn't see where that really tied into Mr. Kokenis' case.
You know, Your Honor, I was going to say, I'm a juror. I don't understand the tax laws particularly. I don't understand pool of assets. I don't understand how the S corporations and things like that. I want to know about things like pool of assets. I want to know what those are about. I want to hear the testimony from Mr. Tripp as to what that is, so that when I go into the jury room, I could bring some knowledge with me as to whether that it does bear some relevance as to what's happening. Just like when I go into the jury room and I bring my common sense. Just like when I go into the jury room and I bring my life's experiences with me. I want to go into the jury room and understand what the pool of assets is. I was never quite sure what it was, but there were people that felt that it was relevant to whether they would testify that it was relevant to a case like this. That's what his expert wanted to say. The government would have been free to cross-examine, just as Your Honor said, that, well, where does it show that Chris Kokenis knew about it? But he should have had the opportunity to present that evidence, and Judge Shader didn't give him that opportunity.
Okay, so you have just a minute left if you want to save just a bit.
I'll save the 1 minute, Judge. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Havey.
May it please the Court, my name is Brian Havey. I represent the United States.
So, Mr. Havey, I found your brief very surprising, I'll say, because the issue that Mr. Kokainis stresses over and over again is this ruling by Judge Shader that uniquely among all state of mind things, you can't present good faith as a tax issue without taking the stand. Just kind of an across-the-board ruling. The judge says it repeatedly. And you don't really take issue. You don't confront that as an issue. You give us lots of reasons, which I inferred were all designed to say that even if that was a mistake, it was harmless error. But you don't. You kind of flirt around the edges of it and say, well, sometimes people have to make strategic choices. But I'd like to know what your position is on the judge's apparently across-the-board ruling.
Your Honor, we never took the position below that the defendant is required to testify in order.
You may not have, but boy, it's hard for me to read what Judge Shader said without thinking that that's the position he took.
That's correct, Judge, but if we look at the judge's decision in the context of this case, in the context of what was presented to him, it is hard to conclude that he reached the wrong decision. He made the correct decision based on
Incorrect reasons?
Well, I would submit perhaps he went a bridge too far. He didn't have to go that far. But
I mean, there's something very troubling about going that far because the law is riddled with subjective standards and, you know, intent and good faith and the like. And I'm not familiar with any case that says the only way you can put that at issue is to waive your Fifth Amendment privilege. Other than this one.
Right. And again, Judge, we didn't take that position. But here, this wasn't even a close call as to whether he was entitled to that instruction. There was not one shred of evidence from the defense as to what his beliefs were or what his thoughts were, let alone whether they were in good faith or not.
I mean, I can imagine evidence. I could imagine, given that you can introduce evidence of the defendant's own statements, you know, maybe somebody else saying this is what he said. I can certainly imagine the objective evidence. So it seems to me there is evidence out there. But Mr. Spivak argues that they were very chilled from introducing even the topic in their arguments because of Judge Shader's rulings.
Well, he's not going to find anywhere in the record where the judge said you cannot argue good faith. He never said that. His rulings were very precise, and they were made in the context of two things, the jury instructions and the evidence that was presented. And they were trying to present a raft of evidence that had nothing to do with the issues. And by the way, the government is entitled to a fair trial, too, Your Honor, not just the defense. And a lot of these things they were seeking to put before the jury had no relevance whatsoever, particularly this pool of capital theory, and you're right to raise that. The witnesses negated it. We had two people testify from the companies that entered into these contracts with the defendant's company. They both said that these were vanilla sale transactions. There was no pooling of capital here. And to throw that before the jury as if this was some sort of defense would have been, as we argued, misleading and confusing, and frankly would have been unfair from our perspective.
Now, do we need to worry about any of this stuff from the income side anyway, in light of the strength of your evidence that the deductions were based on fraudulent documents?
We do not, Judge. And, in fact, that's how Judge Shader let off with his opinion, which is basically, he said in a footnote, but he's saying this is really moot here because the defendants are conspicuously silent as to these, which he described as uncontested, basically. They didn't contest this at trial, never addressed it, haven't really addressed it in their brief. Those issues disposed of the case. And Mr. Spivak says, well, we don't really know who is responsible for these false documents or who they came from. Well, we do know. They came from the defendant, not from his bookkeeper. The defendant was dealing with the IRS, albeit through a power of attorney named Vito Luisi. But he was speaking on behalf of the defendant. He presented these false documents to the IRS. And let's look at what kind of documents these were. These were documents related to his residence. Okay, Sandefjord Enterprises.
Yeah, this is the one where he has the invoice from Sandefjord supposedly selling oil drilling equipment, and it was really...
It transformed what were purely home remodeling expenses into drilling expenses. The notion that Mr. Mondaro is going to get an invoice that goes to Mr. Coquinas, it's related to his house, that Mr. Mondaro is somehow going to find this and then change it into a drilling invoice and not tell the defendant about it, just do it on his own, is ludicrous, and that wasn't even argued. So the fact of the matter is these were personal invoices that were cooked, and they were given by the defendant's bookkeeper to the IRS. We know where they came from. They came from the defendant. His property tax bills that were paid by the company in charge of his business expenses. There was a stipulation as to that these bills were given to one of the administrative office staff at the company and told by him to pay this bill. That's not Mr. Mondaro's fault. This is the defendant instructing his staff to pay his property taxes. And I'll say, Judge, in terms of Mr. Mondaro's credibility, none of this good faith bears on that at all.
Well, I think the critical question is to what extent did the jury get a fair exposure to the theories of defense that Mr. Coquinas was trying to present?
Well, again, the judge did not say you cannot argue good faith under any circumstances. He was looking at each individual witness and what they were trying to present through that witness. And it, frankly, it just didn't get them to where they wanted to go. Mr. Spivak says, well, he doesn't know where good faith and willfulness end and begin. They end and begin at the same place. And this court has said that many times, that these are two sides of the same coin, basically, which is why all the cases say when you're instructed on willfulness, very high standard of proof with regard to intent, this additional instruction is unnecessary. It's superfluous because it's, quote, part of the charge that's already being given to the jury. And not only is it unnecessary, again, Judge, it would have been inappropriate here because there was nothing to support it. And beyond that, the evidence actually negated it. You know, the evidence that the defendant instructed his bookkeeper to, in his words, cook the books, negates good faith. The evidence of false and forged documents negates the good faith defense. So I think they were just throwing this out there, hoping something would stick, and frankly, Judge, it had no place in this trial. And again, that was part of, when I say the district court reached the right ruling, that was part of the judge's order here. He mentioned that in two places in here, that there was really no response to this evidence that came into the record. And I will also say, too, with regard to the evidentiary issues, Judge Shader did not make any sort of knee-jerk rulings from the bench. He gave the defendant every opportunity to make a record and explain the relevance of these various pieces of testimony he was trying to get in.
But he did so through the lens of saying, but I'm not going to let you really explore this good faith thing directly unless you testify.
He didn't say that, Judge. So that's not, and a matter of fact, prior to trial, when the motions in limine were being argued regarding these experts, he said he was going to allow them to put in a limited amount of testimony from Tim Brock to, quote, tee up the good faith defense. And he talked about what a tough issue it was and how he was struggling with it. But he said, front it with the government, I'll allow you to put in a limited amount of that testimony. That never happened, and it didn't happen because of anything Judge Shader said or did. They just decided at the end of the case they weren't going to call him. okay, and the judge had told them they were going to allow some of that. From our standpoint, none of it was relevant, but that was their choice, just as it was their choice to not call the defendant himself and testify. But I would say, Judge, again, these weren't sort of snap judgments by the judge. We had sidebars that were very lengthy that went on. He was telling them, where are we going with this? We're going on and on. What is the relevance of this? You know?
Okay. Your time is up,
Judge. We respectfully request that you affirm the judgment and conviction of the district court. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Spivak.
I must go quickly. Good faith and willfulness are in the same place, that is even more reason why it has to be reversed, because basically Judge Shader then is saying you can't attack the willfulness because you didn't testify. So that is a greater reason for why it should be reversed. I think when Judge Shader made that comment about if the defendant about teeing it up, he said, and what he meant is, and the defendant will testify then after it's teed up. I believe that's what he says at that point. In terms of how rigid Judge Shader was with respect to this, he said this, and I think I have the quote accurately, in order to advance in the necessary good faith any assertion of a good faith defense and thus bring Cheek into play, Cocainus had to take the stand, for no one could demonstrate his good faith belief. That is what Judge Shader said. I don't think he could be any more exacting than that. Your Honor, Mr. Cocainus was sentenced to 71 months by Judge Shader. We believe that conviction should be reversed.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case.